What's up, everybody? It's your boy, Manuel. Today, we are talking to friend and comedian, Eric Rivera. I gotta be honest, I'm super proud of. Decided to have the Conads to come on and have this conversation with us. This has been requested from a lot of you who have thoroughly enjoyed our other sex podcasts, but who also wanted to know, hey, what about this other side of life of those of us who are parents who also deal with struggles of having sex after we have kids? We know that you'll get some amazing things from it. If you're not following us on YouTube, please do like, share, subscribe. That's the way we grow this pod, and we love you for it. Hope you enjoy this episode. This is Knights at the Round Table. And welcome to another episode of Knights at the Round Table. It's your boy, Man Weezy. I got my queen to the left of me, as always, Angela Johnson.
Hello.
I got my homie B Real over there in NoHo.
Hello.
And we got ourselves another comedian. That's my Filipino accent. But Eric Rivera.
He's not Filipino. But
I am not.
No, Eric is not Filipino.
Eric is not. I don't know why I said.
You always do Joe Coy's
comedian.
Yeah.
You think you're a comedian?
Whether he's talking to a Latino comedian, a Black comedian.
But listen,
a white comedian.
If you want to give me those fans, I'll take them. I'll play it up.
Yo, Eric, how you doing over there? Corona and chilling.
I'm doing good, man. I want to hug and shout out all the teachers out there, because now I see the work that they put in. Not that I didn't think they were doing work before. I already told my wife. I was like, when this thing is over and we're back out to normal, I'm going to mouth kiss all the teachers. It is happening.
I can't imagine. We don't have no kids, so we don't know what it's about.
I mean, I see it in, you know, like you talking about it, my sister talking about it, my friends who have kids that are just like, I'm going crazy. I couldn't imagine that life.
Yeah, at all.
We couldn't do it. So God bless you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, because we don't, like, you don't realize, like, you're always like, oh, they're always around. But, like, you don't realize they go to school, there's little breaks you get. You could take them to the park and they can run around and just get tired and you just sitting there watching them. But now you can't even do that because you don't know where this thing lives.
Yeah.
Like what furniture they could touch and get sick. So now it's just like,
yeah,
you got to stay home all the time and they just never get tired. I'm like, I'm drinking like 3 cups of coffee. I'm like, are you guys drinking coffee when we're not looking? Like, what's happening right now?
Man, I don't know. I think it really... At this point, I don't want to say I'm happy I don't have kids. I don't want us to come off like that.
No, I get what you're saying.
But at the same time,
yeah,
I'm happy I don't have kids.
Yeah, I'm a little bit thankful right now. It's just me and my wife and our dog. Like, that's just like,
yeah,
it feels manageable. Like, I'm like, when I want to just go be by myself, I can just do that. And I don't have to hear a knock like, Daddy, can you come out? And like... No,
yo, because literally Eric, every parent I've talked to is saying the same thing. They're like, oh my God, I can only take these little kids in sections. Like, you don't know how much you appreciate, you know, your own time, which coincidentally kind of leads us into the topic of conversation, which is what happens to sex after you have kids? Look, Eric, in all of our podcasts, thus
how do you
far,
spell that?
Sex has been the top episodes. Mm-hmm. So, which is, I think it's because that we've tackled them in a very much like dispelling certain things that we thought were true. So we've talked about our expectations before you got married, when you're living with someone and having sex, when you finally get married and you're having sex, not even after kids, but just when you finally get married, what are the expectations? You know, a lot of stuff that most people don't talk about.
Mm-hmm.
So, in doing those episodes, we've had people be like, "Hey, you're missing a very big demographic, which is us parents who we." Are also married, but or some not married, but we have kids, and that is a very big paradigm shift when it comes to intimacy, especially with the kids when they're younger.
Right.
And so I was like, damn, I didn't even think about that. And we have zero ways to even touch that subject. So this has literally been months that we have been searching for someone who would be willing to actually just talk about it. And I don't know why people get so like tight butt about talking about sex after kids, but you were the first person that was like, I'll talk about it. So thank you for at least being brave enough to weather this type of topic, which I don't think it's like, I don't think it's anything.
It's just
like,
honest and vulnerable is yeah, what it is. Like it's vulnerable. It's inviting people into your space and your privacy, obviously to our own comfort, what we want to talk about. But right. Yeah, it's just something everybody goes through. Everybody who
that has kids.
Well, everybody who is sexually active, you have your own issues when it comes to sex. It's either the kids,
the job,
the stress, sexual trauma from my past, like whatever it is. Like there's everybody has something that they deal with when it comes to sex. Mm-hmm. Nobody has a perfect sex life. What is a perfect sex life? What does that even mean? Right. You know? So I think a lot of our listeners, like Manny said, they're like, hey, what about us? We need some advice too. We need some like how do other people do it? Literally and figuratively.
Which I'm curious, Eric, maybe you have some friends or B, you have some friends, but I don't have any friends that have kids that wait. No, let me stop. I have a couple of friends who are willing to at least talk about their sex life post kids. Mm-hmm. So I have a friend I have two close friends, both of them who have admitted that it does get harder, but that they're still crazy active, mainly because mm-hmm. the dudes are horn dogs. But what do you feel as far as the expectation? Did you have an expectation prior to kids within the marriage? Because obviously you probably had an expectation going into marriage what sex was going to be like. Tell us what that expectation was. Then tell us, did you or did you not have an expectation post kids, and did it line up?
Well, I think a lot of people are scared to talk about it. We'll start here. I think a lot of people are scared to talk about it because at times we put so much value on that intimacy, on sex, right? So like when you're a young couple, like it's all the time. So once that starts changing, people get nervous to talk about it because now, let's say you were every day, and then all of a sudden you live together, and it's like, oh, we 3 times a week, and then you're always gonna have somebody judge you. Oh, that's it, just 3 times a week, and then you get married, and you know, schedules happen, work happens, life happens, and then it starts dropping. So like once you get married, and that number drops, people see it as a warning sign when it's really not. You just mm-hmm. You're adapting. Things are happening. Life is happening. You know, like you know, for instance, like you and Angela. Like you guys, there are times when Angela goes on the road. She's gone, and you're recording. You're doing your own thing. Like, and if people ask you like, oh, how's the intimacy? And you're like, well, I haven't seen her in a month. Like, oh, you guys, y'all ain't. It becomes a thing when it's not. It's like we all have our own thing. So if you have realistic expectations going in that things are going to change. It doesn't matter the frequency of it, but making sure you have that connection from time to time. And I think that's where married people get nervous because like, oh, we only did like once this month. Mm-hmm. It's not that y'all don't care about each other. Life gets in the way, especially like when you first have a baby, the newborn stage, right? You know, she's, you know, past the healing point because there is a long period of, the men don't even know about like, oh, there's 6 months you can't do anything. Like, yeah. 6 months.
Yeah.
It's crazy. But there's a level of tiredness you're into. So like you just have a baby at home. This baby doesn't know anything, you know, doesn't have a routine because it's just brand new to the world. You have to teach it all this. So every 4 hours is waking up and wants to feed and you're going through all that. Like you don't even think about that intimacy because you're now dealing with this new thing that's happening in your life. Hmm. So we have to sort of change the value of what that intimacy is. Cause now it's just intimacy could mean anything as little as like, hey babe, you need some help with that. Or, hey, I did this for you. I made you this sandwich. Cause I know you're going through all that. So you start changing the definition of what intimacy is.
Yeah. Hmm.
That's dope. That's such a good point. And thank you for even sharing those two things. Like do you need a sandwich? Do you need help with anything? Because I think that's helpful for people to hear other options of intimacy. And we had shared on another podcast about when we were touring apart from each other, what we went to a therapist who gave us some other options of how to still have intimacy while we were apart. And so we learned those techniques and those tools. But do you have any other ones that you would want to just name off that for you guys, like other ways to have intimacy while you are too busy with the baby and teaching a baby how to be alive?
Well, in the beginning, you know, you just have to sort of see each other's needs at that point. Like, like women, I give you so much credit. When you first have a baby, first of all, it's almost like a near-death experience. Like, life is coming out of you. You're losing blood, your hormones. Like, it's just crazy what they go through. Then they're home and healing, but at the same time they're healing, they have to feed the baby. Their hormones are going crazy. Like, they're going through so much that sometimes, guys, we're not aware of, because it's like, if you even if you look at society, like, you have a baby, oh, you get 2 months off and then you come back. Like, that's crazy that it's only that quick a period to heal up and then you got to come back to work. So like, we don't even realize the stress is putting on a female's body. I had to watch this thing, a documentary of showing how, like, a woman's organs shifts while the baby's growing inside of her. Like, there's ripping, there's tearing, they got to get sewn back. Like, it's so much going on. It, like, sometimes, like, if we don't realize what's happening, like, you're quick to, oh, she's fine. Like, no, listen to her needs. Like, you know, you can help her out by, like, doing the laundry for the baby and for her, help her out around the house. Like, little things, like, even, like, getting her flowers. Like, you don't even realize how much that means to them, like, while they're going through this period of just trying to get back to some kind of normal.
Well, because a lot of women go through the postpartum depression. Yeah, did your wife go through that? Or
she had hints of it, like, she had touches of it. I don't know how deep it was, because sometimes, you know, we don't want to share that vulnerability with each other. You know, like, I've never gone through anything like birth, but there's times I'm going through, like, lows in my career, and I don't want to put that on her plate. And I'm sure she was doing the same when she was going through this postpartum. Didn't want to put that on my plate. You know. So, you know, I would see stuff like that, and, you know, I'd find ways as a father to go, okay, you know what, you rest, I'll do the bottle feeding on the next one, and I would take the baby out, boom, maybe get her a coffee or something, like something that I know would help her throughout her day, and just a nice little, like, here you go. And that's an intimate moment for her. Like, you rest, I'm gonna come back, and boom, I got her flowers. When our first son was born, I put him on, I strapped him on, which, horrible idea. It was like wearing a weighted vest, and I didn't realize how far things were. I was like, I'm gonna walk over to the florist, I'll walk over, get this coffee. And by the end of it, I was like, whew, this is rough.
She did that for 9 months.
She did it for 9 months. Yeah, I did it for like 3 blocks. I was like, whew, my back hurts.
You know, it's interesting though, that I think that the most important thing you said, which I think people need to hear, is the redefining of intimacy. Because it is true that there is an expectation, and it reminds me of the episode of Friends. Friends comes up so many times in this podcast. Friends and Drake. There's an episode which we just saw where Phoebe is with what's his face, Rappaport, Michael Rappaport.
The cop,
and they're having sex all the time. And Monica gets super competitive, and she's like, "You're not the only hot couple. Me and Chandler, we do it a lot too." And so they're competing with Phoebe to have the most sex. And then Chandler has to calm her down and be like, man, we got other things. Like, we got other things that we do that they can't do, because they're just in that stage. And I think what people need to hear, or at least feel, is that they're, and this is something that I've always known, I realized quickly when I got married. Because you think when you get married that sex is going to be what it was when you weren't married, and it's just not. It's not. You going around getting strange ass all over the place is not an equivalent to working through real issues. You dipping your
where did you go
dipping your tip in the pond of hoe.
Were you at the fairgrounds?
She got three carnival? Arms. All right.
Right.
How strange are we talking?
You know, but when you come into it, you know, you think it's like, I don't know. Somehow you think it's gonna be the same thing, but you have to like literally redefine. And this is something that happened real quick in our first year of marriage. I started realizing, I was like, oh, what's now attracting me about sex is that I'm actually building something. So it's no longer about a mood or whether I'm in the best shape of my life. You know, I'm slowly losing it. But it's become more of like, every time we do this, every time we connect, I am building, like, I see it as building a brick on the house that's going to be our life. And it's so much deeper than what I thought it was. That it was just this act that needed to be this way that I saw on TV, or that it needed to be this. It just became something so much more deep for me. And intimacy, I've learned, is truly growing. And I've gotten as much intimacy and fulfillment in our communication growing and us truly understanding each other. Than I do in actual sex. Because sex is great for the moment, but when we are communicating correctly and when we're seeing each other and when we're creating space for one another to be authentically who we are and to not have fear of who I am, but let her in on all of who I am, that has become way more of a, like, you gratifying. Can't tell me it's so amazing. It is. It's truly gratifying. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I don't know if you feel the same way,
but also it does help.
Yeah.
The sex be better.
It does help the sex be better.
Right.
And that's another thing married people really have to work on is that communication. Exactly what you said. Like it changes. So sometimes we'll go through these, you know, like I get to stay at home with the kids and then I do stand up at night. And so my schedule can be crazy where I'm with them all day. Katie gets home. We have dinner, boom, off to the clubs. And there's times like we're like passing ships. Mm-hmm. We barely see each other. And then the same thing, like we get home and it's like, oh, she's tired from work. I'm tired of being with the boys all day. It's like, all right, let's just watch something on TV. And it's easy to get into those routines of not talking to each other. And then what happens there is because you don't communicate, and it happens with a lot of people that have kids, this resentment starts to grow. Mm. Because we're not communicating with each other and sharing our day with each other, or even doing the things we were doing when we were dating, first married. Like, date nights are super important because it's the first time you get to go out, leave the house. Because sometimes married couples are like, oh, we have dinner at home. But it's not the same, because that person that stays at home, they're like, they're still in the office. Mm-hmm. They don't want to be home. They don't want to have to clean up. They want to have that date night to get dressed up and feel like a person again. Go out and then connect with each other.
Yeah.
You know, we forget that communication is such a big piece of it. And that's why sometimes you'll see these married couples, they have the kids and they're just going through the motions. They're not talking to each other. They're not really communicating. There's no connection. And then 10 years down the road, they look back and they're like, I don't even want to be here no more. And it's sad to get there.
Mm. B, what were you going to say?
Yeah. No, I was going to say, earlier, it's kind of a different thought, but kind of piggybacking on what you were saying is, I think, especially like as a younger guy, my expectations, a lot of it is centered just around me and my needs. Mm. Like, this is what I want to get out of this sex life. This is what I want out of our intimacy. But as I was hearing Eric share earlier about redefining intimacy, everything he was saying about what is his wife needing, you know? And so it's bigger than just, this is me. Mm-hmm. And what I need and what I need to get out of this. This is more about, how can I serve you? How can I help you? Because I know the load that you're carrying. And we've talked about this several times when it comes to the relationship episodes, is that's why this partnership, this relationship is so powerful, is because it's two people who are like, yo, this is bigger than me. This is not just what I need to get out of this. This is, how can I help you? What are you needing out of this? And communication only serves to help you better understand that and help to be that in the midst of all that.
Mm. Yeah. No, I agree. I feel like, you know, there isn't much in society that pushes us to challenge our thought on intimacy, considering that there is no movie that really like draws this out, or no show or no whatever. It's kind of like the hot and the sexy is the pinnacle, or it's what everything should be. And I don't want to downplay it. I don't want to downplay a thriving sex life. But at the same time, at least realistically speaking, when the second you do get married, and I can only imagine with kids, schedules and stress and career, all these things play so much of a big part on whether or not you're feeling frisky or not. And I would say, like, when you're single, or when you're not living together, or when you're not married, you go into your own world, you do your own thing, and you come back when you need to get that fill, but then you bounce, and then you're doing whatever you're doing. You ain't, there's no weight of responsibility of needing to figure things out, because you can just bounce out of the relationship when it gets too much drama for yourself. But everything else weighs. There's a weight of responsibility, I feel, and even more so with kids, that I can imagine puts a strain on a sexual relationship.
Kind of reminds me of the when you were saying there's not many like movies or whatever, but there's this one scene in, God, what is the movie called, with Tina Fey and
Date Night?
Yes, and they're getting ready for bed, and he was like, oh, I thought we were maybe going to, you know, have sex tonight. Mm-hmm. And she goes, oh, okay, hold on. She's taking her retainer out and, like, slobber. And she's like, hold on, just give me a second. And, like, that's more of an accurate depiction of most married couples' sex life, I'm assuming, especially if you have kids as well.
You know what's a great movie to see? The Change Up.
What's that one?
With Jason Bateman and Ryan Reynolds.
Oh, yeah. That's a good
and
one.
And Leslie Mann.
Where they switch lives, yeah. They switch lives.
That felt very accurate. Where Bateman didn't want his life anymore because he was like, kids, the wife that he no longer sees as hot or not, whatever, and he's just kind of wishing he was something else. So he gets his chance because he ends up in Ryan Reynolds' body, and Ryan Reynolds ends up in his body, and they go through life kind of realizing that they miss what they had. Mm.
Right.
But it felt accurate. That and This Is 40.
Which one's This Is 40?
With Paul Rudd and Leslie Mann again. Yeah. You never seen that one?
This Is 40. Oh
man. Yeah, it was good. Yeah. I just recently saw that. Those felt like accurate portrayals of like what it's like. I don't know. Again, because I don't have kids, so I don't know.
But see, that, like, so all those characters, and then you guys said a beautiful thing a couple minutes ago where you guys were talking about you went to therapy. Mm-hmm. Because you were touring a lot, your schedules, and you wanted to redefine the intimacy. Yeah. I think a lot of it has to do with the people in the relationship have to want to make that change. Like, now, I don't know your parents. I don't know Brandon's parents. I can tell you from my experience, what happens is a lot of times we see what we saw with our parents or our grandparents, and we think that's what marriage is. Now, my parents were married for 30-some years. I think I've seen them kiss each other maybe one time, and it was as a little kid, I was like, won't you kiss her? And they like, that's it. Like, they were always bickering at each other, barely talked to each other, didn't communicate. So what happens is, as a person, that software is downloaded on you. So that's what you think, you know, marriage is supposed to look like. And then we see these romantic comedies like, that ain't real. That, who can really have that? So as a married person with kids, I took it upon myself to go, I want to change that. I don't want that to be marriage, because then I'm just going to keep spreading it forward and forward and forward. Like, that's what my kids are going to think marriage is. And they go, I don't want to get married. Mom and dad barely talk to each other. They were always fighting. Who wants that? You know, they didn't go out and do date night, but they get to see us get dressed up. They get to see us be playful and flirty with each other. And they go, oh, okay, cool. That's now they have that picture of this is what marriage is. So I'm downloading a new software on them. But again, you have to want to make that change, or it could become a cyclical thing. Like, I got cousins that they get into these toxic relationships because that's what they saw, and that's what they saw. So it just keeps repeating itself until finally somebody goes, no, that's not what I want. I want this to be different. So the same thing with the intimacy after kids. It's like, we could easily just go, not talk to each other, not communicate, and not have the intimacy, or we can make that effort of like, how can we change that narrative and make it a thing, make date night a thing, make, you know, let's, you know, be sexy around each other. Let's not have to just throw on like flannel pajamas and just like, hey, what's up? We're not doing this tonight, you know? Like, you got to make those conscious efforts to change that narrative.
You know, and it's funny because I think, at least I assume that a kid would be a good enough reason to let things slip. Because I think it's the one thing you both can agree on, that this is hard. So if we do let a couple of date nights slip and then it turns into like a couple weeks of no date night, or I'm tired, me too, man, this is tough. It's very much something that you can justify, because it's like, yo, this is tough. Both of us know that this ain't easy. So we both get a pass on letting things slip. So I say that because I feel like you're 1,000% correct. Like, if you don't, and this sounds weird, but I remember this one married couple told me that they put themselves before their kid in the sense of protecting their marriage. Mm. Not that they wouldn't die for their kid, or not that they wouldn't whatever, but they don't let their marriage be succumbed to their kid. Their kid has to succumb to their marriage. They got to keep their marriage 100, and the kid has to play a role in that. Now, they're going to teach them to be a functional human being, and they're not going to abuse them, but they're not going to change their whole life so that everything is set up for this kid who doesn't even know right from wrong yet, doesn't understand the dynamics of relationship, doesn't understand anything. So you look, the 8 years gone by, and you've made this kid your whole world, and your husband's taking the back seat, the wife is taking the back seat, and this kid doesn't even know that he's like literally slowly killing your marriage. Because he's not doing it on purpose. Instinctually, he's just, I want this. I want this. Give me time. Give me whatever. If you don't think, if you don't in your mind, and this is, again, this is just a somewhat educational, educated
guess
at what I would think would be the smart thing to do, which is pick your spouse over them so that you can keep showing them when they do grow up and are able to look at a relationship, be like, that's what a marriage is, that it's healthy at that point. Not that it's sucked every type of joy out of it because you both had to raise a kid and it got too hard.
No, I totally agree. When we first had our first son, cause we got the two, like there was times we wanted to, you know, go out. Oh, there's no sitter available. Okay. So we would legit put him in his car seat. He was asleep, and just plop him right there on a chair right next to us, because we're still going to have these date nights. We still have to go out and be people. Like you're saying, you can't let it ruin that marriage, because it's easy to go, oh, we're tired tonight. Let's just order a pizza. Let's stay and throw the sweats on. Mm. And then little by little, you just start not really paying attention to each other and not seeing each other as sexy no more, because I'm wearing the same sweats I've been wearing for the last 5 days straight.
Yo, well, that brings up something then. Do you have, and this is funny, but do you have I don't know if it was called moves or secret things that you do where you have to like put the kids aside so that you can have sexy time? Like, is it like when you and your wife are like, yo, we know these little kids love Frozen. So when Frozen goes in, me and you know that Frozen is the moment. That is the cue when you hear
code word Elsa.
When you hear Elsa singing, you know in 5 minutes we are both going to be in the bed. Like, is there any type of like things like that that you have to put in place?
Hurry up, it's Olaf's on. We usually do bedtime, man. Once bedtime, it's our time. To check in with each other before we, you know, let's say binge watch a show or jump into anything. Like, let's check in with each other. How we doing? Let's not talk about the kids. Let's not talk about work. Let's just check in. It's you got to do a check in from time to time. Like, just like anything else, you go to the doctor, get checked. Like, you should check into the relationship. Like, what's been going on with you? You're stressed. Are you okay? This, that, and the other. And you find, by the way, that also builds and helps build that relationship for the intimacy. Because you're checking in on her. She's checking in on you. And this is your partner, you know? This is the person you're trusting who loves you. And she's checking it. It's a moment of intimacy. So then when you go to bed, it's like, okay.
Have you found that has been the most beneficial thing in that building towards the nighttime? What has been the most beneficial thing, at least within your relationship, that you have found – that
preps the mood.
Yeah, that makes intimacy successful. Put it that way. That both people are like, oh, I want this.
Red wine.
Red wine.
Liquid.
Oh, you want some wine, girl? That's what. it's just constantly, you know, checking in on her needs, checking in on her, making sure she's good, because it lets her know that I do care about her. I'm not just going through the motions. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean every time I check in on her, we're gonna have sex. I don't want guys to hit me up later. I checked in on her. I didn't get nothing. You lied.
You were wrong.
You're a liar. This
does not matter. I asked her 3 times how she did today. I have 2 questions for you.
Go ahead.
One. Okay, I'll do the more serious one first. Did you guys, when you first had your first kid, did you guys let your child sleep with you in the bed? No.
No.
Okay.
No. I don't, like, back to Manny's point, like, you let it, your marriage comes first. And don't get me wrong, like, I know there's those books like, oh, you co-sleep and the baby, nope. That baby's got his own bed that we built, we bought, we built him his own little room. That's his. This is ours. Don't get me wrong. In the first couple months, the baby's got the Bjorn that's in the room, but it's still his. That's his space. Because you have to teach that child, you know, what's his, what the routine is, what the schedule is. Once you start just blending that all, like, oh, yeah, you can sleep in the bed. You can do whatever you want. Then it's anarchy. You don't want that.
I do know some marriages that, and I'm not saying, oh, that's why they fell apart or whatever, because I'm sure there are people who have slept with their baby in the bed and they're okay with it. But, you know, they let the baby sleep in the bed, then the toddler, he's now a toddler, and now he's like 3, 4 years old, still sleeping with him in the bed. Like, where is your intimacy time?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what you trained
right.
the child to know, is that you're equal with us, you sleep with us, this is everything. Like, to what you were saying about making your world revolve around the child, I don't have any kids, but I feel like that's a dangerous place, allowing your child to grow up sleeping in the bed with you and it becoming a place for, this is family time, when it's not family time. This is mommy, daddy time. You are over there. Right. Family time is when we're on the couch watching Frozen or whatever. My other question was, do you have any stories of sexy time gone wrong from the kids interrupting or anything like that? I have a funny story of a good friend of mine that when their daughter was younger, they were in the bedroom and it was like early in the morning before the kids woke up. But apparently the daughter woke up and she came into the room and she was at the foot of the bed and she was just tall enough to like see over the foot of the bed. And all they heard her go was, "What's that?" What's that? Do you have any stories of the kids interrupting or anything crazy?
Luckily, we have not had that traumatizing moment. Get off, mommy! We did have one night where, you know, we were in the bedroom, and then all of a sudden we heard one of their bedroom door open, and we're like, and it was that Frozen, just like, don't move. It's like Jurassic Park, dinosaur. We can't see you if we don't move. And quickly got dressed, and then one of them wasn't feeling good, but we have not, knock on wood, have been caught yet. Man. Where one of them walks in and is traumatized.
Have you ever walked in on your parents?
I got a question.
B or babe, have you ever walked in on your parents?
No, I've never seen, I'm like Eric, I've never seen my parents kiss before.
No.
Like you don't even know how you got here.
Yeah.
I don't even know how I got here. How did it happen? No, I had a question for you, Eric. What do you feel like was the biggest misconception that you thought your sex life would be post kids?
Well, you know, you watch movies and television, and it always like these people are never having sex, and you're just like, oh, I guess it's over at this point. Like, even like, you know, I'll do shows, and you ask people like, oh, you know, what advice you give, and it's always like, no, don't do it. And you're like, all right, that just sounds awful. Like, why would anybody get married or have kids? But, you know, it's not that. It's, again, you got to put in that effort. You got to put in that work to what you want this marriage to be. What, you know, like, again, I saw my parents. They barely talked to each other. They never went on vacation. They never really, you know, took the time and effort to communicate to each other. So I make that conscious effort to do different things. I try to change that narrative of, you know, being sweet with my wife, helping her out. You know, we hug, we'll sit on the couch and put our arms around each other. Mm-hmm. And the kids see that. You know, we communicate, we check in with each other. Vacations, we go on vacations together as couples, just me and her. Well, you know, grandparents watch the kids, and we get to go off and do, like, we went to Spain. And that was a beautiful time we had together, just me and her, where, you know, we got to experience a different country by ourselves. And then we do the family vacations as well. Like, my parents never did any of that. So for me, it was like, marriage sounds awful.
Man, that's that's funny, because that is the only thing I do remember from my parents that of intimacy is my mom rubbing my dad's head. I've said that before. Mm-hmm. When he would drive, she'd do this while he was driving. And to this day, that's like the most important thing when I drive. Like, it's my favorite if my wife reaches over and plays my head. Because as a little kid, I was in the back watching my mom do that. And I was like, oh, my mom likes my dad. That's so cool.
Like, oh, she likes
it. This is awesome.
In our family, you're right. Like, you grow up and this is what you see and what you register in your mind. We have a huge, huge family. And for holidays, birthday parties, whatever, we all get together, all the cousins, aunts, uncles, everybody. And there's this one couple in our family, my cousins, Gary and Christy. They were always the most affectionate couple, and you would always find Christy sitting on Gary's lap. She was always sitting on his lap. They were always hugging, kissing, so affectionate all the time. And then me and Manny got together, and we are very affectionate, so I'm always sitting on his lap or whatever. And so that was kind of like the joke in the beginning, was we would battle, like, they were the older generation because they're like in their early 50s, and then us were like super young. And then that became like the battle of like, oh, watch out, Gary and Christy, we're coming for you, you know, because we were like the new affectionate couple of the family type. So it's interesting, like, what you see and respond to and register. And then also just my instinct touches my love language. But it was nice for me to know that I had an example to look to of healthy affection in my cousins, Gary and Christy, and that I could see that and be like, yeah, that feels right.
I guess you're right, because a lot of people, Eric, you're right when they say, like, there is an assumption with being married with kids. Like, we could probably all rattle them off, you know, like, there goes your love life. There goes all your money. There goes peace and quiet. I know, because I've said these things before. I'd be like, why don't you want kids? I'm like, yo, I really like sleeping. And I like doing what I want to do when I want to do it. I like going on vacation. I like doing all these things. But something that you're telling me, which really, I think, dispels all of the things, is just the word effort. And it's something that I know I have to, you know, me and my wife talk about all the time. Because I know with me, I'm a hopeless romantic. I'm not the kind of guy that's just like, I just want it when I want it. And it doesn't matter what it is. Just, I'm all about the romance of it all. To me, it's way better if it's romantic. But any situation can be overcome through effort. No matter what the ordeal, no matter how difficult, no matter how many kids. It just takes somebody literally prioritizing the other person more than this other little human that I understand needs you for a good majority of the beginning of their life. But no one ever foresees this little hellion leaving and going away. And then you're left with this marriage that either survived kids or didn't. And it's funny because we left,
right?
My parents and I, you know, they have their own little routine, and my parents are still together. I've never asked them this. It's something else I'm going to ask them when I see them again. But whether or not they feel like they survived us, you know, like,
I like that this podcast is giving you ammo to go to your parents. Hey guys,
it is, because as I'm talking about it, I'm like, man, I've never asked my parents these questions. Like, did they survive us? Or when we mm-hmm. left, did they notice, you know, that empty nest syndrome, you know, like, did their world just freaking change? Right. Did it collapse? Because if you're living to try to only do one of the things, which is make sure that this kid is amazing, which I think you should do. But if you don't nurture the other half yeah. that's going to be there long when this other kid is gone and maybe not even talking to you, or who knows what the hell this little kid is going to grow up to be, you may not want to talk to him or her. But you still have this significant other that is supposed to be your lifeline. It's supposed to be your other half. I just can't imagine people surviving, what is it, 18 years?
I mean, that's why...
of putting someone else first.
I'm not going to say that's why. But I have seen couples that divorce as soon as their kid goes off to college. And then people are like, wait, what? After 20-something right years?
Yeah, that's what happened to Brandon.
Why don't you speak on that?
Yeah.
Well, it's because exactly what you're saying is people, we put in the effort in raising the kids. We put in the effort in work. We put in the effort in our dreams. But the one thing people aren't putting effort in is that relationship, that marriage. We just let that go off to the wayside for some reason.
Take for granted. Like,
it'll be fine. And then, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, you know, when you're flying an airplane and they say, hey, you know, in case of emergency, please put your own oxygen mask on first and then the minor that's accompanying you. It's like a lot of times without prioritizing that connection, I'd imagine, it's like you're putting the oxygen on this little kid and you yourself, you're like mm-hmm. dying, you know? And that's kind of what happened to my parents' marriage, of like, as soon as my sister and I were out off at college, my mom was like, yo, I'm done, you know? We kind of held it together for you guys. But then it goes back to the point of like, hey, at what point mm-hmm. was this lost? You know, because at mm-hmm. some point you guys were in love. There was a strong connection, you know, and I think there was probably some things that needed to be patched up during my sister and I being there. But I don't think that was the whole thing to blame. I just think a new challenge came and maybe that effort that was going there at first now kind of went towards the kids, you know, and priorities got mixed up there.
I think it's interesting that probably the reason is because it's easier to not resent your kids. Because for whatever reason, as a parent, you expect them not to know stuff. You expect them, you teach them. You'll get mad at a kid. You'll be like, damn, this little guy is a freaking annoying little shit. But you usually forgive your kid a lot quicker than you'll forgive your husband and your wife. And I'm curious as to why. Is it the expectation? Because if your husband or your wife ain't doing the little things for you, or like you said, Eric, if you weren't bringing flowers, if you weren't trying to check in, I feel like resentment can build because there is an expectation of you should know better. This little kid, they don't know no good. We need to teach them. We don't extend each other the same type of grace, the same type of understanding of like, man, as much as we're grownups, as you can see when we're raising this kid, there's a lot we don't know about life. We don't know about psychology. We don't know about communication. So I think the downfall starts when you stop caring about that other person being happier than you are.
Right.
If they're not making you happy,
yeah,
they don't deserve happiness. It has to come.
Right. Now, but it all goes back to communication. The line you just gave me was they should know better. Like sometimes the other person's so mm-hmm. caught up in their own stuff, they don't know better because they're so busy with what's going on. Like your partner could be busy at work with stuff that you don't even know about. And you're like, oh, she didn't even notice, you know, this new old shirt I had on, or she didn't even remember to compliment me on this. And then that resentment builds. Like with anything else, we'll put our foot down and communicate if things are not right in other things in our life. Like if we did a comedy club and you showed up to the green room and that green room was a mess, you would say, yeah, hey, this green room's a mess. And so, oh, we're so sorry, they'd come and fix it. But we don't do that with our spouse to go, hey, let's take a second. We good? Like that check-in. You know, and then that starts to build, man. And then people, like you said, like that resentment builds, like, let's just hold this together for the kids. By the way, me and my wife do have an ongoing joke of that count now, because the littlest one is three. Like, 15 more years, they're out of here. 15 more years.
It's true, but most people live that life of when the kids leave, then we'll start living our life. We'll start whatever it is that we really want to do. And I think, I try to think about my parents and I feel like, you know, my parents, I mean, my mom a couple times in life asserted that she would possibly bounce, but she told me she never did because of us, you know? And I'm kind of glad because my parents' story is cool, you know, like I think my dad has become such a better person. And now being married, how long have they been married? Man, they're probably going on like 40 years.
Well, I mean, you're
my mom was 28 when she got married, and she's 70, I think 72 now. 38, 48, 58, 68. So. Yeah, so like 44 years.
I don't know my mom's age. I don't know her name.
Yeah, like 44 years they've been married. It's good to see them now because there's way less arguments, way less everything. My dad talks way sweeter.
When we're at his parents' house and they wake up earlier than I do, I can hear them in the living room, not arguing, just talking at the highest volume. Papa, but why though? Loud. Exactly.
Dang, babe.
That is what I wake up to when I'm at Puerto Rican house.
When me and Katie first started dating, so my parents used to go to a Spanish, it was bilingual, but it was mostly Spanish speaking Pentecostal church. And she grew up in Maryland and she went to like Presbyterian, Baptist, like it's very different. And one my parents wanted to invite her to church. And when she went, she's like, why is this guy yelling at us? Why is he so angry? I'm like, no, he's preaching. Because the dude like, por la sangre. And she's like, I don't.
Yeah, that cultural difference. I don't get it, but I love it. Y'all are loud too. Don't act like you ain't loud. Like Mexicans ain't loud.
Sure. No, we are loud, but y'all's aggressive.
It's we're passionate. We're considered Latin lovers. Whereas Mexican, not so much.
There you go.
That's not a diss to Mexicans. It's just you don't really, you know, the Mexican dudes aren't like thrown up there as Latin lovers, you know?
No, because we're hard workers. We're working too hard.
Right.
Okay.
I'm not mad.
We're too busy.
What other questions do we have? Any more?
I mean, that was all that I had.
Okay. I don't know if B, do you have any more questions?
No, not really, because the situation is different. I think one of the ones was, like, originally kind of my things is like, hey, there's going to be this reconnection time after the kid is born and the challenges of that reconnecting. But kind of what you were saying, it's not really a question because that connection is something that you were prioritizing already. But I know for some people, obviously, you said it was like a 6-month kind of gap right there. And coming back from that, kind of getting back into the groove, maybe share a little bit about just that reconnection time.
Well, it's just, you know, once that period of like, oh, you can't do it, like you don't think you're going to jump back in. Like that's, don't think after the 6 months, like guys will start timing it like, oh, one more day, girl. but yeah, again, you constantly, with any relationship, even without kids, like you have to roll with the punches. Things are going to change once you move in together. Things are going to change once you get married. Things are going to change once you start having kids. So like being able to adapt and roll with those punches and then redefining what intimacy is, you'll find that, you know, things will get better. Like things will, you'll find your new normal in it all. Like a lot, one of the big things too is like once women are done healing, like they just don't feel like themselves because now they've got the baby weight. So now it's trying to help them, you know, like make them feel attractive again. Like guys don't even think about, some guys don't even think like, I'm just a horny girl, let me in. It's like, no, she just doesn't feel like herself. You gotta, like you courted her in the beginning before you started even dating her. Like that's what you gotta do again, sort of. You gotta redefine this new normal of like, this is who we are, you know?
Yeah, I think that you're right. Like in many stages of marriage, that's what like almost a mandatory thing. you have to check in, which is probably why that book that we read, the initial thing when we did the 7-year marriage before it starts, that workbook says you should probably do this every year or every other year. Mm. Like, you should probably come back and ask yourself all these questions again, because you're going to change as people. Mm. You have to check in. You have to make sure. And I think, P.S., side note.
What? That's accusatory finger. What are you going to say?
I know you accidentally, when we were working on writing skits, calling it the new normal. But I think in the last 4 podcasts, I've heard people say the new normal, which you may be onto something as far as calling the show the new normal. That's a side piece.
I thought you was about to attack me. I was like, what? Let's go.
What?
I didn't
attack you.
He went like this, and you were like, what?
That was that Puerto Rican passion coming out with a finger like this.
No, look, at the end of the day, this is what I feel. If you are listening to this and you are the one that asked the question, I think at the end of the day, the main theme, if you haven't heard anything else, the main theme is effort and communication. If you're not willing to put in the effort, no amount of anything is gonna fix the lack of intimacy. And if you don't communicate that effort needs to take place, then the effort can't even begin. I don't think it's ever going to be easy. I've never heard one parent say being a parent was easy. I've always heard them say it's going to be worth it. And I think the same goes with your relationship. I don't think it's ever going to be easy. But I know one thing that sticks in my mind. I always see these old couples walking this neighborhood. And I kind of think like, man, if we can make it to like an old couple who still holds hands, like, I kind of think that's pretty dope, you know, like a couple that survived. And I'm not like in a bad way, but life is kind of like a massive test. And you don't know, as everybody knows that we're sitting in Corona times, you don't know what the hell is going to happen. And surviving this is a testament to effort and to communication. So I think those are the two things that you take away. Beyond anything else, I think those are the top. Anything else you want to leave us with, Eric?
No, I love that you see a little old couple around the neighborhood, because we have this little old couple. They walk every day and they hold hands, and I'm always so like, dope. Look at them. I always feel like calling my parents. Like, why don't you guys ever hold hands?
I want to ask my parents that too.
Y'all couldn't hold pinkies? Y'all couldn't.
Like, what's up?
Show me nothing?
Dang.
Don't think I'm not gonna call my mother after this. Like, why couldn't you rub my old man's head while he's driving? You never rub his head,
bro. I appreciate you taking time. I'm gonna let you get back to your kids, because I know it was crazy just getting on this. But thank you for making time for us. And
I'm sorry, Katie never made it, and I'm sure she's over there wrapped up in this is
perfectly perfect to this topic. You gotta roll with it, right? Sometimes you just gotta roll with it. You know, and I appreciate you taking time out, totally. And we'll get up after this Corona time is over and actually kick it again. What up? Yeah, hey, guys, thanks so much for tuning in. Go check us out on YouTube. If you've just been listening to this, go look at our pretty faces on YouTube at channel Mind of Manny. And check out our merch, all that good stuff at ManuelReyes.com. We love you guys so much. And hey, we pray you find a seat at the table. But if you don't, you are always welcome at ours.
Cheers.